Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. I'm here in New York City. It's cloudy, rainy, horrible, but it's not hot and it's not cold, so that's still okay. And we got a really good show again. We're continuing with Alton, Illinois. We're going to have Patty Hagen talk with us about the opening of the Riverlands Migratory Bird Sanctuary on the site of the Audubon Center at the Riverlands. We're going to do a lot of history. Well, one of them will be a haunting history with Len Adams, and then we're going to do, well, let's see what's really true with the history. And we'll also include Lincoln and Civil War Legacy Trail, as Don Huber will give us the scoop. And right now, well, I'm not going to do a commercial now because I want to go right to talking with Patty Hagen. Patty, are you there?
Yes, I am, Merle. How are you?
Oh, just fine. So it's hard for me to explain the whole phenomenon that's over there. So you can explain it to my audience.
Well, sure. So I am with the National Audubon Society, and we partnered with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in a development of a visitor orientation center, which is now called the Audubon Center at Riverlands, here in West Alton, Missouri, which is on the Missouri side of the Alton Bridge, so very close to Alton, Illinois, just on the other side of the Mississippi River. And the new center, which has just been finished, and is just a beautiful structure that looks out over the river. The new center is located within the Riverlands Migratory Bird Sanctuary, which is a beautiful sanctuary in which birds that are migrating using the Mississippi Flyway stop in to rest and to nest and to feed during their migratory journey. This is a Corps of Engineers property, and they manage the land as habitat for migrating birds. And so for Audubon, this is just a great opportunity to work with some of the wonderful land stewards within the Corps of Engineers who are working to increase habitat along the river here for this kind of wildlife.
Well, let's say I'm visiting. What would I have the opportunity to do? Like I didn't see the whole thing. It wasn't completely done. But there's the one part where you can just kind of place, just like be indoors and sit in view.
Right. So the structure, the building structure itself is designed with really high, tall, broad, expansive view, big window view of the Mississippi River and an island that is out in the middle of the river right out here in front of us. That is a place where migratory birds can be seen. And so you can sit inside the building on some of the benches that we have that look out over the river and just enjoy the view from inside the building, or you can walk out onto the deck and lawn area, which is just really beautiful as well. It's a gorgeous day here in St. Louis, in the St. Louis Alton area, and the views are just terrific, and the water's blue, and it's just gorgeous. Or you can take, we have trails that go throughout the sanctuary as well. And what's interesting, one of the interesting things about the sanctuary is it is the habitat's been restored to a wetland prairie habitat, so that and a lot of that kind of habitat doesn't exist anymore along the river. So we have these prairie grasses that are blowing in the wind, and I'm looking out my window right now at this, and the sun is shining, and they've got this golden color. So you can walk in the prairie and see birds out there, or you can just take a shorter stroll around the building, or even just from inside the building and see the birds and wildlife that surround us here.
So that, in other words, there's plenty of area to walk around without actually making your way to the island, to an island.
Yes. In fact, there are trails on the island as well. And there's and the island has some forested area, so you can see different kinds of birds, of course, and different kinds of habitat. So you can see birds that prefer forest habitat in that kind of a setting. And the island is also a lovely place to hike as well. And then here in the area, the roads and trails are connected to larger trail systems throughout the region. So we get bikers that bike in, and then we have people drive through, stop here in the sanctuary, and then maybe drive a little further down the road from us to Ted and Pat Jones Confluence State Park, which is a park that is a place where you can witness and actually touch the two of the greatest rivers in North America, the Missouri and the Mississippi, coming together at the confluence here. So it's just there are a lot of public lands around the area, Merle, and a lot of opportunities for people to experience nature and our great river, our great rivers and the wildlife around here.
So has this just been in terms of just an expansion, in terms of just like when, because there's you're having a opening this tomorrow, is it? Is it tomorrow you're doing?
Yeah, we're having we have our ribbon cutting tomorrow, so we're running around trying to get everything ready for that, and then Saturday is our big public opening here at Riverlands. So. So it is the building itself is a new structure, but the Riverlands Migratory Bird Sanctuary has been here and has been developing here over probably the past 20 years. And then Audubon has had a great relationship here in the St. Louis District with the Corps for probably close to 20 years as well. And so this is just this is a great outgrowth of that relationship, and allows us to do things together, the Corps and Audubon, that we probably couldn't do if we were doing them just on our own. So it's a great way to leverage resources and expertise in order to be able to give the public an experience that is even greater than, again, what we could do on our own.
Well, in terms of walking, what would you say is the length of walking, like if you're at this building and you want to actually be on that island to walk around?
Well, there are a couple of ways that you can experience the trails. There are shorter trails, more, family-oriented, and then there are longer trails. We have a total of about 8 miles of trails that go throughout the sanctuary. Depending on the how much time people have and, what their capacity is for a trail experience and a hike, I think there are a lot of ways that you can choose to take a nice hike here. On the island, especially, that is about, that's about a 3-mile walk if you want to take the whole thing, but you don't necessarily have to take the whole hike. So there's a lot of choices here.
Do you find many people want to go to the island itself and to view more because, you know, the birds will be there, or do you think it doesn't matter?
Well, it depends on the time of year, interestingly. So right now, of course, we're in fall migration, and it's because there's a lot of leaves on the trees still. The birds that are migrating in the fall, and are many of which are the same birds that migrate through in the spring, are a little more difficult to see in the forested areas. Typically, the forested areas are highly compelling for people who want to see a great variety of birds in early spring because they're easier to see in the trees and in the new buds. The small size of the leaves at that time. So, in the springtime, people will walk on the island to see warblers and summer tanagers and other kinds of birds that you wouldn't necessarily be able to see when the foliage is really filled out. Now, in the fall and in the winter here in the sanctuary, that is a fascinating time as well, and we get a lot of the big birds migrating through. So right now we have American white pelicans that are migrating through and kind of hang out here for a while and feed at the river. And they're just, I love those birds. They look like big pterodactyls flying in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have in November, we'll get the trumpeter swans, which are some of the biggest birds that migrate through. I think they are the biggest bird that migrates through this area. They have an 8-foot wingspan, and they're
wow.
Big white swans that have a really distinctive call, and they will rest in the sanctuary for most of the winter, frankly, and they're just an amazing sight to see as well. And then, of course, we have American bald eagles that feed here and stay here during the winter, and they just feed right here in the bay. And so when people come to the Audubon Center and they sit and look out these big windows, they'll be able to see in the winter these bald eagles sitting in the trees across the bay and just fishing right out of the bay and sometimes sitting on ice chunks in the bay. So that's a great sight as well.
So the advantage now of having this added, well, it's not brand new built. You've added to a part that was already there, right, in terms of building?
Yeah, the Corps of Engineers had their office building here, and then the orientation center is attached to that previous building, but this building is a brand new structure, newly designed and newly constructed. So, it's just beautiful. It just won an architectural award as well.
Oh, that's great.
Because of its design. Yeah, it's really lovely.
So prior to that, like, there was no really opportunity to, like, sit and watch and, like, be in a heated facility in the wintertime.
That's right. And this is going to offer a lot of opportunities, not only for nature tourism, but Audubon is also well known for its educational outreach to students and families. And so we've already been doing programming for the past 3 years about birds and the habitat and water quality of our great rivers. And so now this gives us an opportunity to expand that programming as well.
Well, I also, we were talking about this kind of thing that records, like, when people see birds.
Yeah, we have, of course, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology is the foremost ornithological institution in the world. And we've partnered with them in placement of a great development that they've made called the eBird Trail Tracker. And Cornell has a database in which they gather information from birders and nature watchers around the world, frankly, on where birds have been sighted and so forth. And they use that data in their scientific analysis. It's a citizen science component to bird watching that's really important. No few scientists can monitor birds like a whole population can. So that's it's a really good scientific piece to this. But the eBird Trail Tracker, and they have many of them around the country, but what they do is, what the Trail Tracker allows is for people who have been out in the sanctuary to research what kind of birds they might have seen. They may not recognize a bird, so they can look up birds based on their form or their color or even their song, and then identify the bird, and then also then identify where in the sanctuary that bird was sighted. And so that all of that information goes into helping birders and nature watchers who come here to see, for example, where have the pelicans been? Are they are they down by the dam structure? Or are they up here in part of our sanctuary called Heron Pond? Where are they hanging out in the past few days? And then again, that all of that data goes into Cornell's citizen science database and helps with some scientific research as well.
So let me ask, is there a charge to come into the building?
No, admission is free, and so we're welcoming all visitors. The center's open 7 days a week except for major holidays, and so it's a great place, a great offering for our region.
Oh, so it's like take a break and just come to nature. And if you don't want to walk the trails or whatever, just I guess you could. Can you see it? Would you be able to see enough without bringing a not a telescope? Binoculars.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to bring binoculars, but we're also going to have scopes in the new building so that people can use the scopes to look out, you know, across the landscape. And certainly, I think, you know, one of the things that we wanted to ensure within the new building is that people had this peaceful, almost ethereal feeling when they come into the structure, and that they feel that they can sit and relax and feel connected to nature, whether they're inside or outside. Of course, we hope to get more people outside. But, you know, sometimes the weather, it's just nice to be cozy inside as well.
Oh, yeah, that's why I just was, I just wanted to focus a little on that, only because, you know, when the weather is not great, either it's too hot or too cold, and then you have, you know, a place you could, you know, it's not the, there's not a seating for like 100 people, but it's,
yeah,
you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
There'll be information available while you're there, correct? In that room, or would you have to go into that smaller room where I went into?
We have information spread throughout the facility, and then we'll have staff on hand who can help visitors as well. A lot of people are very interested, and you know, we have expert birders and all the way to people who are just sort of curious and want to know more. And so we like to say that we can help folks wherever they're at in their bird watching or even nature viewing experience. And we also have exhibits in here. I haven't mentioned that, but besides the Trail Tracker, there are some interesting exhibits that people can enjoy and interface with here, and reading material and so forth too.
Oh, that's good. Just to throw it out, are you going to be having any kind of refreshments, or you're not going to bother?
Oh, no. We'll we're very close to Alton, so we're also hoping people will visit Alton and have lunch and so forth when they visit here.
Oh, no, I'm saying within the building itself. I mean, if they're there and they want know, something to drink. I don't mean necessarily have a sandwich or anything like that.
Right, right. Well, right, and especially during eagle season or on special offerings, we're going to have, because it'll be cold, we're going to have coffee and hot cocoa and maybe some hot apple cider. So, yeah, we're going to try to make this as comfortable a place for people to visit as we possibly can.
Now, I also wanted to ask you about, because although while you're in there, you only see one island, but there's an island, like, if I say, behind that one that we were talking
mm-hmm.
about. Is
mm-hmm.
that accessible as well?
Yes, that's actually, it's hard, when you were here, Merle, it's a little hard to tell from the perspective from within the building, but that is all one island, although it hooks around, and so it's a little difficult to tell that from inside. But yes, that's accessible. And in fact, the Mississippi River has a number of islands throughout this confluence area. And some of them, most of them are in public ownership, either by the Corps of Engineers or Illinois Department of Natural Resources and so forth. But they are Missouri Department of Conservation. And so, and these are all public lands except some of them are connected to, like ours, our island out here in front, you can actually walk from a parking lot onto the island. And then some of them you do need a boat to get out to. But for us, it's very accessible.
Do you think there'll come a point when they'll rent kayaks?
Yes, that's actually part of our bigger plan. We have, so going back to the whole partnership aspect and leveraging resources together, some of the things that Audubon can do in terms of making visitor improvements to the sanctuary are things that the Corps can partner with us on. And so we can leverage this nonprofit and governmental partnership to do some really cool things together. So to your point about kayaking, we do want to have kayaking and canoeing in the bay out here in front of the center. And then even throughout the whole sanctuary. So we have ponds. We'd like to connect all those ponds and make them accessible via canoeing and kayaking. And that is actually one of the best ways to see wildlife, especially in a kayak, because you can be so quiet and
birds
can sort of sneak up on, and not in a good way, you know.
Yeah, right.
Take care of them. But, you know, to view some really cool wildlife that way.
Well, especially like if the trumpet of swans are not like going to be up in a tree, I assume.
Right.
They'll be in the water. I mean, they'll be probably the most the easiest to view,
right?
And I don't know how close they'll let you come to them.
Yeah, yeah, that's
but,
true.
You know, yeah, you could just get even if you just get a little closer to get a so you can look at them or photo. You know, the birds. Who knows? The birds might turn around and say and tell each other, "Hey, people are taking photos of us. You want to get yourself in a newspaper? Yeah, go over, land over there, hang around, and believe me, you'll see the cameras flashing. You never know where you'll be.
Where you'll be? There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll tell them, make sure you dress a little. Don't pose in the nude. We don't want that." I'm hoping, well, when I come back, I think it'll probably be, I'll be back in June. I would love to actually see, these trumpet of swans. But I guess you'll have to send me a photo, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you have to come in the winter to see those guys, Merle, but in the spring, there'll be other really fun birds to see and, the really beautiful little warblers that are in the forest are some of the, hottest attractions for people who like to look at birds. So that would be a fun thing to show you if you come back in the springtime.
Now, when you say the trails are only walking trails, the people can't take their bikes there, can they?
No, not really, not for most of the trails here. But again, you know, part of our master plan for the sanctuary is to increase more or to build more trails, increase bike access within some of those trails. The thing that we have to be careful of, too, is that we want to increase visitor activity and enhance the visitor amenities within the sanctuary, but we also have to keep in mind keeping the birds safe, because it is
a sanctuary.
Yeah. And what we're trying to provide is a place where they can, you know, in the winter, the bay is filled with birds that are resting here in the winter and feeding here in the winter. And so we have to ensure that there isn't too much disturbance so we don't lose that great resource either. So it's a fine balancing act. But I think so far we're doing an okay job.
Okay, that's great. So, you got a website?
We do. It's riverlands.audubon.org.
Okay, that's great. So, yeah. So when is it? The ribbon cutting is tomorrow. What time?
The ribbon cutting is tomorrow at 11:30, and then after that, though, on Saturday is our public grand opening. So if anybody who's listening in is in the region and would like to stop by, we start at about 10:30 for our public events, and we'd love to have you come on in.
I'm curious because of where it's located. Are you going to get like the big shots? When I say the big shots, like politicians or whoever kind of thing, from both Alton and St. Louis, because it's like in between?
Yeah, we should, because the other thing is the Corps is a federal agency, as you know, and has an Audubon is a national organization, and the birds don't care about what state they're in.
Yeah, right.
And so certainly politicians from both sides of the river are very interested in what's happening with our what's happening here with Riverlands and what we can do. One of the things that we know as well is that birders can be economic drivers, not just birders, but any kind of nature activities. The estimates of Fish and Wildlife Service put on wildlife activities in the United States are $120 billion a year. And birders spend about $36 billion on their birding activities. And that includes travel and nature tourism. So it can be a great economic driver for a region. And we hope that we can increase those numbers and help our region as a whole in terms of the economics.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, it's not as if it's boring to go to either place, either St.
No.
Louis or Alton anyway. But it's kind of like, well, it's a good in between, because it's, you know, if you're visiting one place, you know, it's like a little side trip, or either place. It's like, okay, it's not downtown of either place. And it's but a place to see, to take in, to make sure you take in.
Yeah.
Well, on the top of the list. It's not
That's right.
But, you know, it's something, you know, when you want to relax, when you don't want to have to take in information. I mean, you could just, like, if you want to say, what bird is that, it's okay. And if not, you just sit there and just watch. I suppose it's like when people go to a zoo and they just look around, they're looking at the animals. Well, yeah, just sit there and just looking at birds and just relaxing.
Yeah, I think I know when I go visit a place, I like to experience both the urban, experience, but also the natural experience of the region. So, and this is the place where you can do that, so.
Okay, that's really great. Well, I appreciate your calling in and telling us all about it. Of course, I'll be, needless to say, I'll be writing about this as well. And have a great time tomorrow.
Thanks, Merle, and I'm so glad you visited us, and I just really appreciate you, you know, featuring our new center on your show.
It's something I had enjoyed, so I got to push it. not that I enjoy other things, but it's like it's one of the things in my head that, like, that stands out because it's special.
Oh, thanks, Merle. Thanks.
So have a good time tomorrow, and hope you get a lot of visitors on the next day coming in and saying, oh, good.
Thanks, Merle. Have a good day.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye, Patty.
Bye.
Yeah, so if you're, needless to say, if you're in that area, that would be a fabulous place to go to. Well, I understand that the email, Len Adams is, who's doing the haunting, is charging up his phone at the moment. So now what I'm going to do, so I'm going to cut to a commercial, my favorite commercial here, which, oh, you know what it is. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. And you can get these wonderful brownies at www.brownies.com. Oh, interesting. I had just gotten an email about something that I'm getting. I know you got to watch out, like if you see something about, you know, FedEx. So, you know, unless you, when you click on and open it, if you're not getting anything or it doesn't look familiar, you know, don't go into it or read it. But I'm getting something, and it says it'll arrive today, which is going to be, I hope it doesn't arrive. Well, you know, I'll just take a break. I'll let whoever talk, and I'll go to the door and get it. But it's going to be from Shucks Maine Lobster, and I'm going to get have them on the radio at some point. This is a company that shucks the meat from the lobster. I'll get to it another time. But anyway, so let's get back to our show. And I believe, do I have Len here now?
Yes, you do.
You charged up your phone, huh?
Yes, actually, oh, you must be psychic. I actually was charging up my phone. Actually, I finally answered it for the first time in 2 days. I just get that way. I don't want to talk to anybody, so I just hide the phone and just watch TV all day.
Oh, all right. So tell us about this, the Haunted Alton.
Well, that's where I'm getting all my toys ready for tonight. I have a tour tonight in Alton. I took over the Alton Hauntings tours from my good friend Troy Taylor. Troy Taylor's written over 80 books on ghosts, hauntings, crime, things such as that. And he created the Alton Hauntings tours in addition to tours in Chicago, Decatur, Springfield, and we have other tours that there are several of us, like I started them in Lebanon, Illinois, and Lauren Hamilton, a friend of mine, started them in another location. So we're kind of covering the state, but getting back to Alton, when Troy moved back to Decatur, I just kind of took him over for him. He asked me to, which I was honored. But then he said, I have been doing them from the back of the line all for years, so I might as well be doing them from the front of the line. So that, but they are great tours. And what separates us from the, I have to be nice here, My wife told me to be nice. But what separates us from the others is that we actually do real research. If you call me to your house, I'll try and find every explanation to explain what's going on. And failing that or something dramatic happens, we try and document the evidence. And then we use historical research. What happened there, who lived there, and we try and match things up. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But there's one important thing. No Ouija boards, no crystal balls, no fake psychics. We're looking for hardcore evidence. And I think that's what separates us and gives us legitimacy over different people in the area.
Well, let me ask you, what I want to get into is, let's go, the top three places that you take people to for, you know, that are haunted.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
The top three. Number one would be the old Confederate prison. Now, the prison is no longer there, of course. There's just a monument to the prison. But what happened back in the late 1990s, Scariest Places on Earth, that program came to Alton with a script in hand, a script they wrote. Had nothing to do with anything in Alton, but they made up a story that when they tore down the old Confederate prison, that they used the stones as the foundation for buildings and all over Alton, and that's why Alton's so haunted, because of all the horrors that were imprinted in these stones when it was a prison, a federal prison, and then a Confederate prison. Thing is, it never happened like that. Alton was already there, and the prison itself wasn't torn down until 1969, 1970. I believe Alton was there a lot longer than that. But that story has been picked up by many people who believe everything they see on television. And also it's been passed on by the local Ouija board slingers and crystal ball gazers and told us that God's honest truth and there's not one bit of truth to it. But we love that story because we love to set the record straight on what actually happened there. So my second favorite place is the First Unitarian Church of Alton, which I unfortunately did not or was not able to take you to. There is an entity there that is very nasty, very bad, very black, dark, and he doesn't like me very much. I think because I draw attention to him. So I've been batted around quite a bit around in that area. And then I think the third.
Well, when you say bad. When you say bad, I mean, like, what incidents have occurred?
Oh, I've actually been choked, knocked to the ground, had my hair yanked. I got hit so hard in the side one night right in front of the group, I got knocked at least 5 feet into the next pew, things such as that. Just little things.
Oh.
It doesn't happen often, but every now and then, and it usually happens when I'm tired, or I'm not feeling well. You know, your body's normal energies are low. When my batteries are low, that's when he seems to be strong enough just to kind of give me a little whack or something every now and then just to say, hey, I'm here.
Okay.
So people ask, well, why do you still go back in there? I go, because I'm taking you in there. To tell the stories. If I wasn't doing the tours, I wouldn't go in there at all.
Okay, I can understand that.
Yeah, they go, are you crazy for going in there? No, you guys are crazy. That's why I'm taking you in there. Like I say when they show up in really horrible weather, if you're goofy enough to go out in it, I'm goofy enough to take you out in it. So let's go. So, and then the last place was the place I was able to take you, although it was very quiet that night, and that was the old slave tunnel at the Enos Tuberculosis Sanatorium, which is now the Enos Apartments.
Mm-hmm.
That one is one of my favorite places because, to me, that's not scary. It's actually, I feel really good that I'm telling the story. I mean, it's a horrific story about these people on their their journey to freedom, but I believe I am actually paying them honor and telling the story the way it should be told. And like you heard me, if I make any jokes, who am I making fun of? I'm making fun of me and the stupid things I've done while I've been down there. Well, there's been other groups that have been allowed to go in there, but they're not allowed in there anymore because they just make up stuff. And that's the problem when you have an area as large as Alton, all this made up stuff.
What is the story with the tunnel?
Now, with the slave tunnel, Nathaniel Hansen in 1850, he was a wealthy farm implement manufacturer, and he built this huge house on this hill. At this time, it was the highest developed area in Alton at the time. And if on top of the house, now you actually have to step way far away from the house to see there's a cupola on the very top of the house, a small room with windows all around. And it was with lanterns that they would signal across the river. They were only a couple of blocks from the Mississippi River, but they would signal with those lanterns whether it was safe for a meeting. And if it was, then they would meet the runaway slaves, and we're only talking two or three at a time, not a mass exodus. And they would meet them down at the river, hide them in a wagon, bring them back to their house, and go there. They had a two-story carriage house, but the first level was literally buried in the ground, kind of like Batman coming out of the Batcave. They would go in through that door, and once they were in that carriage house, they weren't going to be found because the entire lower level of that house was nothing but a maze of tunnels. And there was one tunnel in particular that they would hide the runaway slaves until it was safe for them to go on to their next location.
Uh-huh.
But
so,
the tunnel you were in was the tunnel. And, you know, it was up in the front of the building. And people asked me, well, why did they put him out in the front of the building? And I believe it was one of those, that old saying, hiding in plain sight. Because where's all the noise and commotion going to be? It's going to be out on the street up above their heads and out in front of them. So any noise they might make would be covered up from the daily noise, you know, that was going up and down the street.
Right.
It's just a theory I have, but it sounds pretty good. Nobody else has come up with a better one yet.
Okay.
So I'll pat myself on the back for that one.
So those are the top three. So what other places? Like if I had the whole day and I said, take me around to all the, you know, what other places?
Oh, my goodness. If we had the whole day, we definitely would have to gas up the car. And we could go like up to the McPike Mansion, which many people know about the Lemp Mansion in St. Louis and the whole history of the Lemp Brewing family. Well, the McPike Mansion in Alton is the wine-growing version of the beer story from St. Louis. The McPikes, they actually own many acres of ground there. And Henry Guest McPike built his mansion up there. And that whole area became known as Lookout Mountain or Lookout Hill, something like that. But they grew all kinds of exotic plants and grapes, and the grapes were such great quality that they made this absolutely wonderful wine. And he was a very shrewd businessman. He worked in many different areas. He was actually mayor of the town for one term. And he was such a mover and shaker that during the Lincoln-Douglas debates in 1858, he got to sit up on the platform during the debate. I mean, you had to be somebody to do that. And unfortunately, over the years, after he died, as the family started to die off, move away, fall apart, there's all kinds of stories. There's like three different versions of the stories as to who was there and who wasn't there. But we do know for a fact that the place sat empty for many, many years, and old Mother Nature moved in and the vandals moved in, and they stole everything that wasn't nailed down. Then they stole everything that was nailed down. And then Mother Nature came in because of the broken windows and, like, the old wooden rain gutters rotted out. And finally, the roof went bad, and the house was just an absolute mess. And a lady named Sharon Lutke and her husband George finally ended up buying the place in the 1990s, and they're slowly trying to restore it back to its former beauty. And hopefully one day it'll be a bed and breakfast. But there's supposedly many entities, at least nine or so, seven to nine in it, that are encountered in that place. I've encountered possibly two, but that's just me. I'm not in there all the time.
So at this point, it's not a place that anybody could stay at or that anybody's living at?
No, it's too deteriorated upstairs, but they have fixed up the old wine cellars.
Mm-hmm.
To where if you go up there and meet up with George or Sharon, or if you do one of our spring or summer bus tours, we actually go up there and do go down into the old wine cellar.
Oh, okay.
Which is really cool. That's where I had my first experiences.
And what was that like?
Well, once I was telling Sharon, with the lights down in front of the group, I was telling Sharon the lights were on. It was very hard to see in there, and I was saying, you know, Sharon, this is a lot like the Lent Mansion. I was in the Lent Mansion at least 25 times before I had my first paranormal experience. And I said, this place is a lot like the Lent Mansion. And she said, yeah, it gets like that at times. Just then, I felt this gust of air, icy cold air, shot up my pants legs. And then as I'm looking around, because I thought I was close enough to the door, I had my small flashlight on. There was nothing there. And as I'm looking around, I feel these tiny little fingers just kind of marching up my spine, like doing that little itsy bitsy spider, you know, kind of thing. And I realize I'm the only one in that part of the tunnel. There's nobody there but me, or nobody that can be seen. And that's the kind of experiences I've had since then. I've been in there, and I've had like a hand on my shoulder, especially it seems to be there's supposed to be several children that haunt the place. I hate that word haunt, that actually exist there. And I've had them like hold my hand, pat my shoulder, pat my forearm, things like that. They seem to be attracted to me. So I must be a nice guy. Well, you met me. You know what a sweetheart I am.
Yes. So what other places?
Let's see. There's the old Hop Hollow Road, which is way up north of town.
Let me ask you a question. Are there any places that you deal that have to do with the Lincoln and Civil War Legacy Trail that you found anything?
Not that we do, no. The only thing we talk about is the exact – we point out – this is strictly historical. We point out the exact site where Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas held one of their debates in 1858 for an open Senate seat. Actually, there's another location that's right around the corner from that. You remember when I took you to the prison site?
Right.
Well, there were a bunch of buildings that backed up to us. Well, on the other side of those buildings, there's a place known now as the Lincoln Lofts, but that was the old Franklin House Hotel, and that's where Abraham Lincoln actually stayed during those debates. And for many years, that was one of only three privately owned Lincoln memorial sites in the entire country, although there were never any stories told of Lincoln's ghost wandering around. I think he was too busy being everywhere else.
Oh, okay.
So we have Lincoln stories, but not ghost stories.
Oh, okay. So nothing comes up for you, like when you're over there?
No, no. The drunks, they opened up a brand new bar on each side of this place, and that's why I didn't take you over there to tell the story, because it's a wonderful story. But they've opened up two new bars, and on the weekends especially, we get a few uninvited guests that try and join the tour. And it's so much of a hassle, we don't even go down there anymore.
Oh, okay.
Which is a shame.
Well, in terms of taking somebody on any of these, on any of the tours, what is the, what things have, like, happened to them? Is anything?
Oh, most definitely. Take the prison. The prison has that wall that's in front as a memorial to the prison. And, of course, all those stones, they used to be farther back and up the hill as part of the prison. They just brought those down there for the memorial site. Well, on the side wall, not where you had me put those chickens, but on the side wall, there are several windows there. And they're just, you know, open windows, opening in the walls. I was doing early this spring, there is a TV personality, Randy Naughton, over in St. Louis. Well, she does a blog. She goes to places over the weekend, takes photos, collects the stories, and does these really wonderful blogs, and she talks about them on Monday. Go to here to see the blog about this. Well, she showed up on this Saturday, and my wife and I took her around with her two daughters. Well, she wanted to take a picture of her daughters at that wall. Well, as her two daughters were posing in one of the windows, Randy took the photo, and then as she's looking at it on her camera, she said some words that I can't repeat, but there was evidently in the other open window, and I saw it, it appeared to be an old Civil War soldier sitting.
You probably said something like, holy shit, what's this?
Well, that's the word I was going to use, but I didn't I didn't know how much you filtered this before it went on the air. But what was funny about this guy is, I mean, you could see him plain as day, but you could also see through him. You could see the tree and the chain link fence that was about 5 or 6 feet past the wall. So
uh-huh.
You could see this guy in great detail, but you could also see everything behind him. And then there's another location, which I cannot mention because the lady got mad and threw us out. Well, there was a gal named Virginia Kerr, who was with one of the TV stations in St. Louis, and she would do location shots like two or three a week. Well, we spent the night in this one location right there on Broadway in downtown Alton, and she was not a believer when we started, but she was when we finished. She actually had her, like somebody grabbed her hair and slowly lifted it up and held it and then slowly let it back down. She had like her ankle grabbed. She got tapped on the shoulder and all these kind of things. And the owner of the place saw that on TV and did not like what we were doing and wouldn't allow us to be there anymore. But there are TV personalities who used to make fun of this, especially this time of year. They've come with me to Alton and Lebanon and places that I do, and they go away believers.
Does it believe
something's going on?
Do you think the ghosts come out more knowing it's Halloween? Has that ever happened?
I think they do, but only for one reason. I break this down to energy. You know, your body will die, but you don't die. I do believe that our soul, our essence, our life force, whatever, goes on. But if it doesn't go straight to heaven or doesn't do all these things that we're taught, if we're still hanging around here, this is energy. And I believe that there's nothing stronger energy-wise than human emotion. And by this time of year, I'm doing tours almost every night. So tour after tour after tour, all this human emotion coming from these people that I'm bringing on the tour. Some are scared. Some are mad because their girlfriend drug them on a tour. Some are happy to be there like me. I think by constantly bringing all these people in, we're actually charging up the batteries. And that's why we get more things happening.
Okay. Any other places?
Well, we go, when we do the bus tour, we do go up north to Hop Hollow Road. And Hop Hollow Road is where the Union soldiers were supposed to bury the Confederate dead when they were holding Confederates in the prison during the Civil War. But more often than not, they just kind of dumped the bodies in the weeds and played cards, got drunk, came back at the end of the day. And we've had our own experiences up there with all of a sudden it looks like people starting, like two or three guys starting to walk out of the woods as we're up there. And we can't tell if they're real or if they're not. But they are scary enough looking, like hobos and kind of thing. We just get the heck out of there.
How about cemeteries? Do you go to cemeteries?
We do go to, when we do the bus tour, we go to the Alton City Cemetery. Now, of course, there's a lot of made-up stories about that place, just because it's a cemetery. But there is a young girl that only appears to children there. She died when she was, I think it was diphtheria. I won't swear to that. But she was only about 9 years old. And her grave is right by the entrance when we come in. And we've had many people report to us that their children wander off. And then when they find them, they're upset. And they go, "Where were you?" "Well, we were playing with the little girl." Well, they ask, "Well, what little girl?" And, "Well, she was right over there." And they all walk over to the same headstone. And the name on the headstone is Lucy Haskell. The Haskell family was a very important family in the history of Alton. And poor Lucy, they have a park named Haskell Park, named after her. And her little doll house, which was actually a replica of the family house, but it was big enough that she could stay in there. You know, it was like a life-size dollhouse,
right,
for children. And that's still there to this day. So Haskell Park, but she only appears to children. I thought, as immature as I was, that she might appear to me, but it hasn't happened yet.
Good. I guess kids are more, not prone, but, you know, when it comes to ghosts.
They're open. They haven't been taught to be adults. They haven't been taught to be adults that all this is nonsense and you shouldn't believe in this. And they throw that wall up in front of them. That's why we believe children and animals and that. They see things the way it really is.
Oh, like my cats.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I get that there's a ghost in the house. It's been here, I don't know how long, and, you know, doesn't do anything, doesn't act with me. It doesn't, you know, nothing happens kind of thing. But I could always tell, like, where the ghosts are by my cats. You know, they don't stare at walls. Not two cats, both staring at a wall or something if there's nothing there, you know?
Yeah, if there's nothing there to hold their attention, we get that quite a bit. Well, here's this makes me sad. I hope I don't start crying, but one of my two dogs, my Scottish Terrier, Maggie, just passed away a couple of months ago. She was just 2 weeks short of being 14 years old, but 5 days before she died, I started seeing her big sister, who was a Scottish Terrier also, but who had been dead for at least 8 years and had never been in our new house. I started getting glimpses of her in the new house. And I'm wondering, what the heck is she doing here? And then it was 5-6 days later that my other Scotty, Maggie, passed away.
Wow.
So was the one coming back for the other? I don't know. All I can say is I was at home. I have no witnesses other than myself. I was not drinking. I was not under the influence of any drugs or anything. But I saw and I felt and I could feel, you know, I just adored those dogs and I could just feel that love. And I honestly believe that the one came back for the other. So did it happen? I can't say. But in my mind, it happened and it makes me feel good. So if that's all that it does, well, then that's good. It makes me feel good, and I don't care what anybody else thinks about it.
Okay. So you offer these tours, like, is it like 7 days a week kind of thing, or?
No, they will get more and more, like tonight. We were going Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then now we're getting into, I start tonight, Thursday through Sunday, and within another week or so, we'll be doing like Tuesday through Sunday, and I will be doing Halloween night and things such as that. And then after Halloween is over, then we start slowing down a bit.
Okay.
And we'll be done by the middle of November.
And do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, it's www.prairie, that's a P-R-A-I-R-I-E, ghost, that's plural with an S, .com. And click on that, and that takes you to the History and Hauntings website. It talks not only about the different tours that we do, but it also talks about the American Ghost Society created by Troy Taylor and all the different books that he's written and others of us have written. And we have stories about Alton towards the very bottom. And it just shows you this is what we think. And, you know, you're free to check it out and come see us anytime. We have all kinds of other functions where we just get together and just exchange ideas. So
cool.
This is free and open. It's nothing, and there's no BS, no, you know, putting everybody in the dark and then making things appear and reappear. That's for the phony balonies. That's not for us.
That's good.
I even have that written down, phony baloney. My wife said, write down words you can say so you don't offend anybody.
Oh, I see. I wonder what the mic.
That?
Oh, she just said that was Esther. She just wanted to let you know she had a good time there.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the chickens.
Oh, okay. You pulled those chickens out. I first thing I thought, I don't know what she's doing with those, but I think I like this lady. You're sick and warped like I am. I just wish we would have had more time. I could have shown you places, and we could have made the visitor center take us out to eat again and things like that. But unfortunately, they're kind of hit and run.
Yep. Well, I'll probably be back in the area like next year. That's I think that's they have already decided that they want me back. But I appreciate that you calling in and sharing all of this with us.
No problem. I'm just glad I turned on my computer for the first time in 3 days and saw your message. I literally did not see your message till 11:15 my time.
Oh, 15
minutes before I was supposed to call in. I kept walking around the house going, there's something I'm supposed to be doing, but I don't know what.
None of the ghosts reminded you, huh?
No, I think it's more the guardian angel or that little voice in your head going, hey, stupid, turn on the computer.
I see.
So I started listening to that little voice, and you know what? I don't get in trouble like I used to. So
well, that's good.
It's helped me quite a bit.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you calling in, and it was great talking with you. Hopefully, that Don Huber reads his email correctly. For some reason, I don't know whether he thought he was calling in earlier, but hopefully he'll call in at the now soon. You know?
Oh, okay. Well,
otherwise, I'm gonna have to seek his phone number and call him, which is I can do that. Thank goodness now.
I always seem to come through at the end, so no worries. But anyway, I tell you what, I had a great time meeting you, and I wish there were more places I could have shown you. And maybe next time when you show up, if you show up earlier, we can go to some of these places.
Okay.
Like earlier in the day. Well, if I know ahead of time, maybe we could set up stuff that we can drive to, and there'll be some people waiting for us, you know, like the McPike Mansion and things like that.
Sure. Okay, that'll be great.
Well, it was great meeting you, and call me anytime.
Okay. Thanks a whole bunch, Lynn.
Okay.
And have a great
Bye-bye.
Day.
Take care, and happy hauntings.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Yes, a haunting we will went. Now, let's see. You know, like, in case if you hear that little pause kind of thing, as opposed to P-A-W-S, P-A-U-S-E, somebody was trying to call me, and it's like, well, you can't. I'm on the phone. And now that might have been Don, so I'm going to see if I can get him on the phone. Let's see what happens here. Can't tell you what the number is. Okay, let's see what happens.
Hello,
Don?
Yes.
It's Merle Exit.
Hello, Merle. How are you? I'm sorry. I apologize. I've had people in my office all morning, Merle, and I couldn't get to the telephone. I set the alarm, but I couldn't get here. Can I help you out now?
Well, you're on the air now, so.
I'm on the air now. Well, that's one way to get it done, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. So can you gab with us now?
I'd be happy to.
Okay. Well, what I want to talk about is the Lincoln and Civil War Legacy Trail. Tell us.
Okay.
Tell us about that.
Well, we have recognized 9 different sites here in Alton where either Lincoln had some direct influence on, or direct connection would probably be a better term for these places, or places that are related in some way to the Civil War and that era. We included, for instance, one building that Lincoln did some legal work for the owner of the building, and he gave a speech there in support of William Henry Harrison during the 1848 elections. Another building, of course, we had the Lincoln Douglas debate site, which is, you know, where they had the final debate of the 7 Illinois Lincoln Douglas debates back in 1858. There's a hotel here called the Franklin House that was the place where Lincoln had his reception that day. And we have a Civil War military prison that was located here, as well as a national cemetery and a Confederate cemetery, both of which would be directly related to that Civil War prison. And then we also included the Lovejoy Monument, which is a little bit of a stretch, but Lovejoy was an abolitionist newspaper editor that was murdered. He was trying to publish his abolitionist paper here, and they threw his press in the river. So they got him another one, and they threw that one in the river. After they threw three in the river, they decided that they were going to defend the fourth one. And while defending that fourth press, Lovejoy was shot and killed. In 1897, they erected a monument in his honor here. He's considered sort of a martyr to free speech and freedom of the press, and was actually the first white man that was killed over the issue of slavery who had not been a slave owner. There had been some slave owners killed by slaves, but there had never been a white man that was killed over this issue, especially by another white man. And Lincoln made a comment at the time about how well remembered Lovejoy would be. He's very well remembered here, of course, but he's not exactly a national figure by any stretch of the imagination, except among newspaper editors. But he's part of our Civil War legacy simply because he was part of that abolitionist movement that really kept things stirred up until the war finally broke out 150 years ago. But we've got a nice driving tour. We have, like I say, there are 9 locations. There's a couple locations down by the river, and it's they're all within about a mile or a mile and a half of one another. It's not very spread out. It's not exactly a walkable tour, but it's a small enough tour that somebody can take it in the afternoon, and a little more than an hour, they could probably cover almost all of it. But there's a driving tour that goes with it that you're able to access either by cell phone. There are CDs available at our visitor center. I believe you've got one of those.
Yeah.
And you can also there was another venue they were talking about, and I'm not an expert on these things, but I believe there's a way to access it through a radio station. But I'm not familiar with. I do know that your cell phone. You can call up this one number and press the number of the site on the map, and it will give you a little vignette. It's not actually a narration as much as it is actors sort of telling the story from the point of view of someone who may have been there at the time. It's a little more interesting than just having somebody like myself spew facts and figures at people and tell them the actual history facts. It's got a little bit more of a human touch to it, and we're kind of proud of it. We were able to get a grant from the state to do this in recognition of Lincoln's 200th birthday last year, and it's been really popular. I think I may have told you I live very near one of these sites, and I've been astounded at the number of people that stop and look. Tourism's sort of it's hard to quantify sometimes, but when you see it on a daily basis, it's really very interesting to see how many people are still interested.
Now, is this what's on the? I haven't actually listened to the CD. I have the tracks up on this radio to play.
Uh-huh.
Are these tracks the ones you were saying? Is the part of the thing where you're hearing? Is it just narration?
No, these are actors. It is a narration of sorts, but it's actors. It's more in character than it is. It's more of a small play presentation than it is a lecture, if that makes any sense.
All right. You know what I'm going to do? Just for like 30 seconds of one of them, I'm going to click one of them on.
Okay.
We have like 30 seconds so we can hear. This, I'm just going to pull track, whatever track two says. So let's see.
Sure.
Simeon Ryder, sea captain, adventurer, community leader, financier, and businessman. Simeon Ryder was all of these and more. He was husband, father, and friend to Abraham Lincoln. A native of Massachusetts, Ryder settled in Alton in 1834.
Okay, so this is not, this is the narration one.
That one is, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so, that, and, so the CD I have is narration for what? While you're in the cemetery? Is that what this one is?
That one would be, the Ryder Building is a building here on Broadway where Lincoln gave his speech. And he also did some legal work for Ryder. We have a letter signed by Abraham Lincoln here at our library, which is on view right now because of the anniversaries. That building is here. In other words, that would be one of the stops that you would make on the tour. It's now a little restaurant called My Just Desserts, but that would be the stop when you get to that particular building, and I don't know the number off the top of my head, but they're not all like that one exactly. You will find some of them are a little bit more in character and some are a little bit less in character.
Oh, do you know, should I pull another one and see what that's?
Yeah, you might want to try the one for the prison, for instance.
Which, do you know what track it is?
No, I sure don't.
All right, I'm just going to pull track 4, just see what that's
Elijah about. Parrish Lovejoy.
Yeah.
Prior to moving his printing press to Alton in 1836.
Okay, so that's going to be narration too.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Yeah, there is a bit of narration in all of them.
Oh, so
some of them are a little bit.
Okay, so they'll all start with the narration, and then it'll get into kind of the story.
Yeah, sometimes a person will assume a character. For instance, the one at the prison talks about a lady whose son died there and who visited the prison, excuse me, on a couple of occasions, and it's told from her point of view. So, again, it gets a little bit more personal than just, you know, just the raw facts like the ones we've heard. It does give you a much broader, there's a bit broader story involved than there is like in the literature that you receive with the map and the stuff that's on the different little kiosks as you go from one place to another. The recording has quite a bit more information there, so. it's a pretty nice little history lesson. But it's kind of, we tried to keep it a little bit lighter than normal, if that makes any sense.
Oh, sure, okay. What I might do is I'll play this at another point, and just to let you know people hear it to hear like some of this. So now,
sure.
Oh, you know what I wanted to ask you, because I totally forgot to talk about this last night. The tallest guy in the world, or whatever kind of thing.
Yeah, Robert Wadlow.
Yeah. We forgot to talk about it last night.
Yeah, he was. Robert was just an Alton resident. Parents were normal, actually kind of short, actually for normal at that time. He was born in 1918. By the time he was 5 years old, he was 5'4" and weighed about 145 pounds. And he just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. He eventually grew to 8'11" and a little bit, which, you know, to this date is on record as the tallest human that's ever lived. He was a very kind person. His nickname was the Gentle Giant. And he went to work for Brown Shoe Company, which was a real large shoe manufacturing operation in St. Louis. They made Buster Brown shoes. There's a lot of other brand names that you would recognize that escape me right now. But they were a huge shoemaking operation. And he would tour the country and promote their shoes and get his picture taken with people, but was just always well known as being just a super tolerant and super nice guy. It's an interesting story because we have a lot of pictures of Robert because he lived until 1940, but he died at 22 due to an infection in his ankle. something that today would be easily curable with a little penicillin was deadly to him. He wore braces because of his size, and one of the braces wore a kind of a sore callus on his ankle, and it became infected, and it took him. And he was, like I say, he was very, very well liked here. We have here in our museum like his cap and gown from high school, and there's a picture of him in his class, and of course he towers over everybody by 3 feet. And in his Boy Scout uniform, which was the biggest one ever issued, and he was also a member of the DMLA, which is a Masonic youth organization, I understand. And his ring, his Masonic ring, is on display here, and you can pass a 50-cent piece through the ring without touching anything on the inside of it. He was a very, very
wow.
big guy. But again, I can't stress enough how what a reputation he made for himself as by his kindness, because you know people tend to gawk and ask silly questions when when they run into somebody so large, and he evidently handled it with a great deal of class.
So I now because I stopped by the statue.
Yes, yeah, it's a life-size statue. Of course, everybody loves to get their picture taken with it, but that it's on the grounds of the Southern Illinois University Dental School here. But there's also a chair there that represents it's a replica of one that's kept in the Masonic Temple here that he used while he was a member. And it's even the biggest person you know just gets lost in this chair. It's pretty interesting, but. I think Alton may well be known on the internet probably more for that than anything. There's a whole lot more here than just Robert Whitelow, but he is one we can be proud of, like Miles Davis and Elijah Lovejoy and a few others.
So now, aside from the Lincoln and Civil War Legacy Trail, what other history do we have there that you talk about in Alton?
Well, there's a great deal of, we've got a really nice stock, as you saw, of old Victorian homes. Since Alton was a riverfront community, our commerce was primarily done in conjunction with the river. A lot of steamboat trade stopped here. There was a huge hardware business of one kind or another along the river, and a lot of people made a lot of money from that. There was also a lot of money made in Alton at that time by the insurance companies. Because these boats sank on a fairly regular basis, insurance was a really big part of that particular occupation. In other words, you had to have good insurance if you're going to put a packet boat out on the Mississippi, because there's all kinds of bad things that could happen. And it evidently did very, very fairly often. I think the life expectancy of a riverboat was only a couple years. Well, these folks built a lot of really beautiful homes here, and we're very fortunate to have a real nice stock of 19th century homes here. And the town's kind of a quaint little place anyway. There's a lot of little pieces of history around. We have a legend of the Pisaw bird here, which is part of an Indian legend, and I think it's probably been sort of, embellished a little bit by us white folks. But the natives had a legend that this man-eating monster lived up on top of the bluffs. It's rooted in a pictograph that was found on the bluffs here. It was recorded by Marquette and Joliet in 1673 when they came down the Illinois and Mississippi rivers. And there were a number of pictographs on the bluffs here that the natives had painted here. One of them was a big jaguar with a long tail, and it sort of morphed over time into this Pisaw bird. The legend was actually part of the Illini Nation, but there were so few of them left by the time this area was settled. It was sort of obscure, but it's been part of our tradition here since the 1920s when they repainted it back on the bluffs, and we've had a replica of it up there ever since. It's another one of those things. We know it's probably not all the truth, but it's very interesting, and it's a good story.
Okay.
It's kind of like the ghost tours. Kind of like the ghost tours that we have, you know.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. In terms of what you hear, like in other words, when they go on the ghost tours, the hauntings. Do you have anything like to say? Well, they say this, and this is what's true.
I'm sorry.
In other words, they might be saying that this is happening or whatever, but you have what the true history is. Is there any clash of data?
Philosophy? No, not really. The most of the tour operators here kind of start with someone like me who's a local historian, and there are related stories that in other words, they weave a little history into the ghost part of it, but it does take a little imagination to follow along where they go sometimes. Alton is supposed to be the most haunted small town in America. That's based on this federal military prison that was here during the Civil War, and a number of the soldiers died, and then all those stones were used to build basements and walls all over town, and of course their contention is that the ghost went with the rocks. So that's a little bit far for me to follow along, but they really do a great job of presenting the town, and most of the things that you would think would be ghost related, of course, are the older homes and the older locations. So the history and the ghost kind of go hand in hand. You're going to get a little bit of history lesson if you go on a ghost tour, whether you want to or not.
Okay. But is there anything like this, anything in particular that you've gotten, well, they say this and this is what the history really is, or anything like that?
Not really. Like I said, they've embellished a little bit here and there, but none of it's really... I wouldn't call any of it an outright lie. It's just sometimes by the time the third or fourth storyteller, they teach one another. So by the time it gets down to the third or fourth person in the role, there are some times when it kind of wanders a little bit. But for the most part, they keep pretty close to the facts. There's so much history here that you don't really have to make up too much, because there's always something that you can find that will kind of fit with your story. Usually they start with one of the old homes that supposedly, got a presence in it or something, and then they weave into that the history of the home, et cetera.
I see. So now, how would, when somebody wants to do this kind of tour, do they get a hold of you? How does someone go about doing this to get a history tour?
Well, they all coordinate with our Convention and Visitors Bureau, and our visitor center here is really great for a town our size, I believe. They've got a great staff, and they're very they're very knowledgeable, and they have all that information available. Someone could call that number, and I'm sure they'd be happy to send them quite a bit of information, actually.
Oh, okay. So they should get in touch with the CVB then, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, their number here is 618-465-6676.
All right, that's pretty cool. Do you have any of your favorite places that you like to take people to?
Well, one thing we always do when someone comes to town, and I know you did this when you were here in Alton, but you got to go up the river road. We've got four lanes of highway tucked right beneath these bluffs, right next to the river. It's all built on accreted land, which means they filled below the bluffs, and it's a beautiful drive. And there's a couple of streets here in Alton that up on like a Henry Street, 12th Street, that have a number of these houses that I've told you about. But Alton is sort of compact, so it's really not very hard to see a great deal of the town, in a relatively short period of time. The Convention and Visitors Bureau has a couple of driving tours. Besides the Lincoln tour, there's a home driving tour where you can You can go from one of these houses to another. It gets a little history on each one. My expertise or my research for quite a while has been specifically on the federal military prison that was here during the Civil War. That's probably where I tend to gravitate to. And of course, this is the 150th anniversary of the beginning of the Civil War, so we're seeing quite a few people come to town. We've had a number of people come through that have been, descendants of some of the people that were prisoners here. As a matter of fact, I've got a website that's under reconstruction right now, actually, but the website lists the soldiers that died, and there's been a number of people that have called us and said, this is the first time the family knew what happened to that person since they left home to go fight the war in 1862 or 1863 or whenever. And they just left, and they never knew what happened to them. And in some cases, the poor guy had passed away within 2 or 3 months of him leaving home. There's probably been 10 or 15 of those over a period of a number of years, but it's really very interesting. And these people are very gracious. They find the burial place of an ancestor, and they're always very generous about sharing information. So we've got a pretty nice stock of information here at our library about a number of the prisoners that were there. We've got quite a few pictures, and it's really fascinating. And it's amazing to me how much, of course, the Internet has helped a great deal, but there's a lot of information out there now available, much easier to access than it was before. And like I said, that would probably be the place that I would start somebody, simply because I know more about that location than any other.
Oh, okay. That's really good. Now, is there, you will comment, is there a history museum in town?
Yes, there is. There's a small history museum here. They're open Thursdays through Sundays from 1 to 4, or by appointment. And the Convention and Visitors Bureau has their number there and their contact information. So if someone was going to come in town and wanted to see that other than their regular hours, they'd be happy to meet you up there and show it to you.
Oh, okay. That's great to know. You must enjoy your job, huh?
I do. and most of this doesn't really have anything to do with my actual job. So I'm the township supervisor here in Alton. I have always been interested in local history, and it's sort of become a passion after a while.
Okay, that's great. Well, I appreciate. I was going to say I appreciate you calling in, but you didn't. I called you.
It's all me. I apologize again for that. Merle, the people that were in my office had come here from Mississippi and were looking for great great grandpa so and so. And I had visitors, so
I did.
Oh yeah, I had a file on the fellow. They were just looking, thought they might see his name on a monument, and I was able to provide them with an entire biography of the guy. So, they were from Louisiana, but this fella had come from Missouri, and he's actually still here. He's buried here in the Confederate Cemetery. So, but
cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and they, of course, I've gotten some information from families like that. After they return home, it comes back. So it's a two-way street, but it's been really great for us here to have this information from these families, because you don't know what happens to these people after they leave either. So it's kind of help round the story out a little bit.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, I'll let you get back to work.
Okay.
And thanks for all the information. And I'll write as much as I can when I do the article. I'll probably just say,
sure.
Go talk to Don. Whatever.
Well, you're welcome to do that. I'd be happy to.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Take care. Have a good day.
You too, Merle. Thank you. Bye now.
Well, bye. Okay. Well, what I'd like to do, that would be interesting. Let's just... No, instead of listening to it, because I know my phone is going to die. You know, if we do this, I go through this. And rather than the phone drop dead on me. And then, of course, I have somebody going to deliver something, and it'll be while I'm on the phone. So I am going to end the show early, maybe like on another show. I'll play a bunch of these things so we can kind of hear what's going on. In the meantime, I'm looking next week to do some shows on St. Louis, as I call it, and St. Louis, as they call it. So tune in next week. And for everybody, have a great day, afternoon, evening, morning, wherever you are, wherever you're doing, listening to this show. And, see you next week. So now all I got to do is find my... Ah, there it is. Bye.